Chayatamune mune mahamunaye soha Chayatamune mune mahamunaye soha
And on page 34, you will find the four immeasurables that we will say in English. They're about halfway down the page. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be separable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And now we will chant this in Tibetan. And so just go back to the beginning.
Actually, the better version for chanting, that's okay, is at the bottom of page 37.
Oh, right, the one we put in there. Thank you.
It drops a couple words from the beginning of the additional line so that it works with the tune.
Okay.
Sem chan tam che de wa.
Six mantra eight times.
Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Mani Padme Hum.
And now Green Tara's mantra seven times.
Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha.
And now I'm going to read the prayer list. And so while I'm doing that, just if you would like to say the Mani mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, or just think wonderful good thoughts about all the suffering people in the world.
We should have chosen Rinpoche to
I got it.
You're on top of it.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's going to be a little bit separate.
Okay.
Tenzin Delacrim, this is those killed by natural and man-made disasters, especially the earthquake in Nepal. All the Tibetans have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. And the following individual mind streams. Tenzin Delac Rinpoche, Jim Clark, Rosa Filosa, Dr. Nick Gonzalez, Leslie Lauder Inman, Lisa Lott Kunt, Sandy Wimbish, Manny the Vole, Job Search, Roseanne Barona, Mike Brown, Joey Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Pooja Shaw, Greg Weaver, Joe Whitley. Prayers for health and well-being. Jabjay Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh, Geshe Gelug Choda, safe travels. Geshe Paulden Tsongpo, safe travels. Both back in the States safely. Venerable Gelton, Venerable Chuki Lamo, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, especially the earthquake in the Nepal. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Bernard Baranski and family, Jim Barnes, Luce and Narcissus Barona, the Bility sisters, Katie Black, Brenda Yerky Barrows, Ken Costello, Kitty Kauda, Ollie Davis, David Dennis, Dimitri and Susan Diamopoulos, Tashi Droma, Ilana, family of Rose Filosa, family of Dr. Nick Gonzalez, Mildred Gooch, Tracy Haas Thompson, Robert Harris, Christina Harrison, Annie Hassel, family of Leslie Lauder Inman, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Dell and Sue Johnston, Walter Jones, Kellen Kazanoff, Rachel Keith, Nina Kowalski, Jonathan Kramer, Shanti and Kurt Lameter, Tanya Lamont, Linda Lang, Mary Logic, Olivia, Pat Long, R.M., Wilbert Martin, Anne McCall, Elvia Mejia, Bruce Miller, Jose Marino, Audrey Murphy, Evan Myrtle and family, Joseph Palermo, Jai Pandya, Drew Pledger, Anna Pozo has passed away, so her prayers for happy rebirth. Just lost my place. Anne Rivers, Ralph Rumley, Joanna Cease, Pooja Shaw, Allison Shealy, Aunt Sheila, Jamie Sheridan, Patty Sheriff, Brandon Simmons, Andre Smith, Emily Smith, Sarah Bumgartner, Snotherly, Nancy Sorbet, Jackie Stonehooner, Carol Strother, Adin Tokum, Lopsang Topton, Francis Ullman, Dion Washington, family of Sandy Wimbish, Suzanne Williams, Joe Carroll Wilson, Shy Wolowicki, Marguerite Young, Vivian, Cokie the Cat, Georgie and Cadro the Pigs, Gatsby the Cat, Lily the Cat. Thank you. Thank you very much. So okay. One of our Chris, do I just push a button now? Thank you. This is all new. I am Chris is the techno guru of the center and helping me do, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. Yeah. Yippee. Chodron Rinpoche is a highly realized being and teacher who had the privilege of having here at the center several years ago, who kindly offered many teachings and initiations, especially Thousand Arm Chenrezig, which is the Buddha of compassion, and he passed away. What I'm offering is an opportunity for those who wish to say a mala of the Chenrezig mala to themselves. And we're going to take about 5 minutes, partly to do this, but I also thought, thinking about Chodron Rinpoche, who gave away the Dharma, gave the Dharma so freely and so exquisitely, I thought it would be an opportunity for us in meditation to reflect on the great generosity of all the teachers that have come into our lives. Each of us, you know, whether they have carried the name, the official name of the Dharma or not, have been instrumental in our developing our minds. So, let's just start. And if what works for your mind is to just be quiet and watch your breath, that's lovely too. But I just thought starting the day with gratitude for our teachers would be a really wonderful thing. Okay. Well, I think I'm supposed to ding it. Okay. Okay. Thanks, Donna. Okay, I'm going to do something, such a small group, and I'm really grateful for that. So I think I know some names, and I'm going to go around and see which names I know, and ask for the names that I don't. And since it's, I'm really trying to learn the names of people at the center, so I know Barry, I know Amanda, I just met Amy, I met Tanya, Rebecca, Nicholas, and now I'm dead in the water. So, would you tell me your name? Yeah.
I'm Laura.
Mara.
Laura.
Laura. Okay. And?
Pablo.
Pablo? Laura, Pablo.
Paula.
Paula. Laura, Pablo, Paula.
Michelle?
Shayna.
Yance.
Yance, sorry, Yance.
Carl,
okay. Carl and Casey. So Carl, Casey, Amy, Laura, Pablo, Paula, Michelle, Yance. Can anybody help me? What? Shayna. Ha. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Oh. Hi, you missed the name calling. Could I know your name? I should know it, but I don't. Donna?
Diane,
okay. I wear double hearing aids, and so sound discrimination is a challenge for me at times. Okay. I refer to myself, for those people who are new as the not ready for prime time, none. And so I'm really just trying to give talks that might be of benefit to our minds while Geshe-la is away. And so when I was thinking about what I would talk about, I thought, I'm going to talk about women. I'm going to talk about female manifestations of the Buddha. And I thought getting ready for it would be fun and to prepare for. But as I began doing it, I realized that doing anything about women is kind of fraught with peril. But I was spent too much time working on it to back out. So here we go. As the monks on the roller coaster said, "Whee!" The role of women in Buddhism has, it's just interesting. It's, it's been influenced by all the cultural things that roles of women and men have been. But I realized that there was a lot of things that I had learned by learning about the women in Buddhism. So I thought, well, I'm just going to share a little information. And so I thought, who shall I start with? And so I decided, do I just push the little arrow, Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Did it change on the screen?
Nope. Okay. We're working on this.
There we go.
Oh, okay.
Is that the one you want?
Yeah, that's the one I want. Thank you.
Let's find out. Yes.
That's good. See? He did it. We rejoice. Okay. So Tara. Tara is a female manifestation of enlightened activity. So, well, what? Can people, they don't have to see me then. That'd be great. Okay. Does that help? Yeah, great. So why am I talking about, a deity? I mean, that's a woman, but whatever. Well, one of the And one of the stories about Tara is that, like all of us, she started out as a sentient being. And her name was Yesi Dawa, which was means wisdom moon. She was an incredible practitioner. And since this is probably even before Buddha was, I don't know what she, but just an incredible practitioner of compassion and wisdom, and people came to her. And so the men and monks around her said, "Oh, Yesi Dawa, you must pray that you can be born a man in your next life so you can be enlightened." And Yesi Dawa was very kind of sweet and smiled and says, "Well, I'll think about it." That's kind of a vernacular, but pretty much what it comes down to. So she did think about it, and what happened is that in another conversation, she said to them, and this is a quote from some of the texts, I don't know if it's, is "Nowhere can I find what is male, nowhere can I find what is female. These are simply forms, no more separate from one another than is a wave from water. But since many Buddhas have chosen to come as a man, perhaps it would be more helpful if I became enlightened in a woman's body. So I vow for all time until all sentient beings, to all suffering is ended, in all worlds, for all beings, I will become enlightened only in a woman's body." Well, it took her, what do they say, that the Buddhist scriptures are good for, I don't know if it's exaggeration, but huge long periods of time. So eons beyond calculation. But she was enlightened, and when she became enlightened, she became Tara, the mother of all Buddhas, the wisdom realizing reality, enlightened activity. So what's interesting in our tradition, particularly in from our teacher, is there's a huge devotion to Tara. We do a Tara practice once a month on Saturday nights. And I just, you know, personally, I kind of get, I'm a word person, but I kind of just get happy when I look at her. And since happiness is my main goal now and in the future, for me and everybody else, it works. But that's a little, you know, one can say, well, that's a myth. That's a nice myth. It's a nice story, you know. But what about real women? You know, what about women, you know, that we know really existed? And how, what was their role? And as I said, you know, I have my own ideas about what the lessons are in this. But hopefully there'll be time that we can talk about if there's anything you heard that was of benefit to you that you're willing to share, because I often find that what I think is there is a mere shadow of what other people hear and see, and I'm grateful for when they share it. So one of the most famous women, well, obviously Buddha's mother, Maya, who gave birth, but 7 days after he was born, she died. Well, in that time, you know, kings had more than one wife, and so Maya and her sister, Mahapajapati, were both married to the same king. And so Mahapajapati took over the raising of Buddha, became his wet nurse. And so I'm going to push this button. Oops. Ah, there. Oops, sorry. One back. I went too far. Oops, I'm going forward. I want to. There we go. I'm not sure. This kind of looks like something that was painted in the Italian Renaissance. So, but she raised the Buddha. And of course, as we know, the Buddha left home and left his wife and child and went on this journey to seek enlightenment and did. So in the fifth, once he had done that, so in the fifth year of his after he had begun teaching, Buddha's father died. And Mahapajapati had become an incredible practitioner, very, very committed to the practice. And so committed to the practice that she attracted many women around her. And this was something I had never thought about before, is, you know, a lot of men met the Buddha and left the householder's life and joined him. Well, they weren't all bachelors. They were husbands and fathers, and they, you know, like Buddha, left home. But it left many, in a sense, displaced women, you know, who also were committed to the Dharma, you know, that also had heard Buddha's teachings. And so she was such a practitioner that she, you know, she attracted these people. And I guess as a queen kind of maybe felt some responsibility for them as her subjects. I don't know. That's all conjecture on my part. I'm good at that. So, but she decided that, you know, her husband was dead. Her children were grown. Buddha obviously didn't need her anymore. And so she decided that she wanted to leave the householder's life and become a nun. And so she asked the Buddha, "May I ordain?" And he said, "No." There's lots of conjecture about what the reasons were, but, and so she asked again, and he said, "No." And she asked again, and he said, "No." Well, so for the time being, she stopped asking. And a few months later, he was at, I think it was Jetta Grove, one of a place that he did spend a lot of time and did meditation, where a lot of monks were. But it was quite far away from where Mahapajapati lived. He had, and so she and many of the women around her went to see the Buddha. They shaved their heads. They put on rags, which is what, you know, people leaving the householder life were doing. And they walked. Now, there are many stories about how far she walked. Some say 150 miles. Some say 350 miles. I'm not sure if it was kilometers or hectares or whatever we're measuring things in. But they walked a long way. And there's something about how many women were with her. Some say there were a lot of women. Some say 500. If you read a lot of Buddhist stories, 500 is a favorite name for a number of people showing up. It's, but she showed up at the gates of Jetta Grove, or the beginning entrance to Jetta Grove, and Ananda, who was a disciple and of the Buddha and served the Buddha, she was a mess. I mean, here's a queen who's had a kind of a nice, comfortable life, and she just walked 150 miles in rags, barefoot. She was dirty. Her feet were swollen, probably cut. I mean, and Ananda said, like, what are you doing here? What's going on? And she said, well, we have come to ask the Buddha if we can become nuns. And Ananda, taking, you know, in his compassion for her and the strong desire he saw in her, went to the Buddha and said, can, you know, these women want to become nuns, can they? And the Buddha said, no. And Ananda said, well, I guess took it from a different text, said, can women become enlightened? Can someone become enlightened in a woman's body? And the Buddha said, well, of course. And so Ananda said, well, if a woman could become enlightened, and if someone can become enlightened in a woman's body, and leaving the householder's lives is a very dedicated way to pursue enlightenment, wouldn't it be a good idea if women could become nuns? I don't know if the Buddha took a big, deep breath. I don't know. This is, again, you know, the way it is in the stories. And so he said yes under certain conditions. And those conditions were a bit limiting. I'm not even going to go into them. But if Mahapajapati Gautami agrees to those conditions, yes, women can be ordained. Well, she did. Her goal was to become a nun. That's what she wanted. And she wanted that for her women, and for the women that were following her. And she wanted it for all women that met the Dharma and chose that path. Yay for me! So that was the beginning. Now what's interesting is that the notion that the Buddha refused three times is in the story about it is in the Pali Canon. When you read the Sanskrit and the Chinese version of the same of the first women nuns, there is no mention of Buddha's refusal. I'm gonna editorialize. I guess I think one of the lessons for me is that no matter how enlightened the teaching, since we kind of are in this world and many of us are not enlightened, there will be cultural things that will affect how things kind of develop and evolve. But what I take out of that is that this amazing woman wanted it so much that she was willing to go to any length to get it. And I just rejoice. So that was the start of it all. That was the start of, you know, monks and nuns and the opportunity to practice the Dharma. So there was another woman shortly after that, I mean shortly within that time frame, her name was Patakara. And the reason I talk about her is that she was a wife, had a husband, but her family was far away and she really, really wanted to visit them. And her husband said, no, it's not safe. And she was pregnant with her first child. So being a determined woman, she snuck off when he wasn't around. And he caught up with her and said, no, this is unsafe, you have to come home. And in the meantime, she'd gone into labor, so she thought that was a good idea. So she had her first child. And she became pregnant a second time, and she asked her husband, I really want to go visit my family. And he said, oh, please, no. And, of course, she left again while he went after her and caught up with her. And a storm came up. And so he had sought shelter. And so at this point, you know, classically she goes into labor. And he's out getting, you know, things to make the shelter better. And is bitten by a snake and dies. So she gives birth alone, and she has her other young son there. And, of course, incredible grief, just amazing grief. So she continues her journey, but she comes to a river, and the river is swollen. And she knows she can't take both children across at the same time and get them there safely. So she leaves her older son and says, you know, just sit, you know, Mom will be right back. And she takes the newborn infant across and lays them, you know, in a safe place on the grass and goes back across. And, of course, she's very frightened about leaving her newborn and keeps looking back. And as she looks back, a hawk comes down and snatches up her newborn. And she screams. And her younger son hears this and comes to the edge and falls in and dies. And this is a horrible story. I mean, a horrible story. So she continues on her grief-stricken. She continues on to see her parents. Because where else is she going to go? And as she's entering the village, she asks where, you know, her parents' house is. And the person says, ask about anything but that, anything but that. And he says, and the man says, well, there was a terrible storm last night, and the roof of their house collapsed, and the husband and wife and son died. Well, she goes mad. She goes absolutely mad and just starts wandering around in the clothes that she's got on, and keeps wandering around the clothes she's got on, and they become rags, and they start to fall off, and she's kind of raggy and just about naked. And, of course, when she comes near any civilized place, people shoo her away. And so the Buddha was teaching, and people are trying to shoo her away, and the Buddha kind of just walks up to her, follows her and walks up to her and says, it is time to come back to your senses. And says, in all of your lives, you have wept more tears over the dead than there are oceans to fill. And her mind calms. And she receives teachings. And she becomes a nun. And in the canon, she is known as the great upholder of the Vinaya, which is my code of conduct. And many people came to her, and she nurtured many women on the path. So, well, take from it what you will, but I find it pretty daunting. The next person I don't have a picture of. I couldn't find a picture of her. She's known to many as, we're leaping all the way forward from the 6th century before the Common Era to the 10th and 11th century. If I'd had a lot more time to do research, I'm sure there's lots of people in the middle there, because obviously there were many nunneries and all sorts of stuff, but I don't have them. So, her name is Bhikshuni Lakshmi. Her Tibetan name is Gelungma Palmo. She was an Afghani princess. You know, I think it's interesting, you know, one of the sad things that we've had to accept and hope will end is, I mean, Afghanistan was an amazing Buddhist country. And you know, many, many holy sites that have now been destroyed. But she was an Afghani princess, and she, from a very young age, compassion and practice and giving were important to her, and she chose to become a nun. Well, after becoming a nun, she developed leprosy. Well, you know, leprosy, well, it's still not a disease we're comfortable with, but and we still isolate people to some degree, you know, in order to treat them and cure them. But then people were just absolutely kicked out and abandoned. So she was kicked out of the community. And went to live on her own in the forest. But did not give up her practice. Matter of fact, redoubled her practice of meditating on compassion and praying about compassion and her devotion to Chenrezig of Avalokiteshvara was amazing. And around it, she developed a very, very strict fasting practice. And this went on for several years. And the leprosy disappeared. And she became a great teacher of this practice. It's called Nyunye. It's a fasting practice with many, many, many prayers that goes over about 48 hours. It's appreciated, practiced, and in our tradition. And hard as nails. Hard as nails. But she, one of the things about her is she is considered inner aspect was that of Tara. So again, you know, Tara showing up in female form to help us and guide us. But that's enough about people we can't meet, okay? That's enough about them. Well, I guess we can, it's 10:49. Okay, well. So that's enough about people we can't meet. Maybe this is selfish of me, I'm going to talk about some of the women of the 20th century. And I'm going to start with Tenzin Palmo. She's one of the first women to become a nun, Western women to become a nun. She was born in 1943. Daughter of two people in London who had a fish shop. They were fishmongers. She was very ill as a child. And so it was recommended she have a very calm career. So she became a librarian. Nothing quite ever satisfied her. She was always looking. She was always looking. And so she began traveling. She began studying and reading, and she decided she was Buddhist. And there's a book called Cave in the Snow, and she's so humorous about herself. You know, she talks about, so she didn't really know what a Buddhist monastic should dress like, so she kind of made up her own version with these big, billowy yellow robes and all of this stuff. And so there's a Buddhist meeting, a group of, and she goes to it, and here are all these well-dressed men in suits and women in stiletto heels and makeup and hair, and here she is in her idea, and she said, oh, you can be a Buddhist and still wear makeup. But she heard about a person by the name of Frida Beatty, who was a woman married to an Indian who was very supportive, spent time in jail. She had been very supportive of Nehru, and when Nehru was released by the British, we had given refuge to the Bettans, he asked her to be there to help them adjust. So Frida Beatty, who died in 1977, there are many lamas that tell the story that they were the first person she met, greeting them as they came across the mountains with a bowl of hot soup. And she established a school for some of the young Tibetan monks, and Tenzin Palmo helped her with that. But then one day, a Rinpoche, Comptroller Rinpoche, showed up to visit the school. And she said, oh, what a one in. And Tenzin Palmo tells a story about the fact that she felt she had known this person for years. And 3 weeks later, she ordained. Kamtrul Rinpoche, so she went to his monastery where there were 80 monks and attempted to practice. But there are, you know, very strict rules about nuns and monks and of them being in the same space. And so even though she was with 80 monks, she was very much alone. But in her studies, she realized, she came across that the people that reached enlightenment or reached, you know, spent a great deal of time alone with no distractions. And so she decided that she needed to do retreat. And Kamtrul Rinpoche agreed with her. And she found a cave. Well, actually a niche in the mountains that kind of got bordered in, really. It was about, it's probably about maybe 6 by 8 feet. She spent the next 12 years from the time she was 33 to the time she was 45 there. She would leave during the summer for teachings from Kamtrul Rinpoche and then go back. And the only reason she left retreat was, when you're in retreat, she didn't think about renewing her visa. And the government showed up and said, you have to come down tomorrow because you have to renew your visa. Well, she couldn't renew her visa, and so that ended retreat. But she had spent the last 3 years in absolute solitary retreat. And so and one of the things that was true is her teacher was very concerned about a lineage that was dying out. And it was a lineage of female practitioners that practiced in the way of the Himalayan saints in terms of, you know, kind of naked in the mountains, able to make their own heat from their own bodies. It's called Tummo, and were just incredibly diligent meditators. So she began teaching and practicing. And what happened was she, you know, someone, he said, I really want you to start a nunnery. He hadn't passed away yet. And so she went to an astrologer, which the Tibetans have a thing in, and the astrologer said, well, if you want peace and quiet, stay in retreat. That's a really good idea. A nunnery is also a wonderful idea, but it's going to be obstacles, conflict, and stuff. And so she says, my first response was, retreat! Well, she met a Catholic priest of all things. And he said to you, what are you thinking? We're just kind of rough blocks of wood. And we need sandpaper to become smooth. And yes, the nunnery is your course. So she did. And she's established a nunnery in the Himalayas that where women truly study, because there's been a long history of women having more difficulty studying than men in Buddhism. And she says, when I get, and when the nuns can run the nunnery themselves, then, and I'm still healthy enough, I will go back into retreat. So I'm just going to share some of the things that she said. Everything is a journey, not about what you gain, but about what you lose. The point of meditation, to learn how to wake up. It is to be conscious in the moment without all of our usual roles, projections, opinions, ideas, and mental chatter. So she's 72 years old. I haven't met her, but I hear she's still dynamite. And she's, from the minute I read about her, she was quite the hero for me. The other nun that I'd like to talk about is Robina Quarton. And here she is. Robina is, I think, 71. She's been a nun for 30. She ordained when she was 31, so whatever that comes out to.
40 years at this point. She's Australian, and she's right out there. Excuse me, I'm going to use bad language. One description of her in a quite nice magazine, I think it might have been Tricycle of Mandala, referred to her as the nun who's the badass. But so full of compassion and amazing. And again, Tenzin Palmo overcame incredible obstacles to go forward with the Dharma. Robina comes as one of seven children, Catholic family. Says she always wanted to be a nun. She wanted to be a priest, and they all laughed at her, so she said, I'll settle for being a nun. And comes out of a family of alcoholism, abuse, I mean, you name it, and she's right out there with it, you know. Incredibly risky hitchhiking where terrible things happen to her, and she tells the story of that. But what she always wanted was to serve and find the truth. And she got into, I think, Kung Fu. Yeah, Kung Fu. And she was really proud of herself. She said she had perfect feet for Kung Fu, and she practiced it 3 or 4 hours a day. And then some bloke ran over her foot. And because of that, she ended up having to sit still for a while and went to a class that Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche were offering. And that was the beginning. That was in 1976. In 1978, she was ordained. She talks about, you know, people say to me, you know, say that she, you know, oh, you have every right to be too angry, Robina. You all those terrible things happened to her. And she said, maybe so, but I was born angry. I came out screaming. And it affected her behavior. You know, she talks about hating men, hating women, hating this, you know. And Buddhism was her path to stop fighting with anyone or anything. But it was a slow path. She tells the story of Lama Yeshe saying to her one time, dear, it's not you that we don't like. It's your behavior. Because she could be kind of a whirlwind. But she ended up, there was a magazine was started, Mandala Magazine, and she comes from a publishing family, so she thought, well, I will be asked to be editor. And Lama Yeshe, when roles were being assigned, he came to Robina and said, you can be the secretary. And Robina goes, oh, poor Lama, what is he thinking, you know? But she talks about the journey. So she accepted that. She became editor of Mandala Magazine. And then in 1994, she began receiving letters from prisoners, and she started Liberation Prison Project, and she served prisoners all over the world. She now teaches. She gave up everything except, I think, 2 suitcases, and at this point travels the world teaching. And again, you know, people will say to her, you know, what about, you know, women in Buddhism, and, you know, monks sometimes get priority. And she says, you know, I'm practicing the Dharma. That's what counts. And she quotes another nun who says, I don't rehearse anger. Well, and she also quotes Dalai Lama, who says, if you can do something about it, fine. If you can't do something about it, why worry about it? And so for me, the example of these nuns is Tenzin Palmo starting with Mahapajapati, Gautami. They did what they could do, and they sought the Dharma. And all of these, I mean, obviously not Tenzin Palmo, Robina Quarton has taught at the center since, oh gosh, I don't know when. And then after Robina, Thupten Chodron, I don't know if anybody knows Thupten Chodron, She's an amazing teacher and a Western nun, born in 1950. I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit that this woman is a year younger than I am and is one of the most amazing teachers and committed to serving the Dharma. Her most recent book is co-authored with the Dalai Lama called One Teacher, Many Traditions. And it's, you know, Buddhism coming to the West has been wonderful, but for Sangha it's kind of been a bit of a challenge because we don't really have kind of the monastery structure or the support. So in 2003 she started a monastery in Srivasti Abbey in Northeast Washington. She took the plunge. There she is. And she's that happy all the time, guys. I spent 2 weeks with her in India, which was amazing, and learned lots of lessons in humility. But that's Thupten Jodrin. And so she started this monastery, and they say the prayers in English. It's for Westerners, obviously. You could join if you're a spit, but they say the prayers in your own language. And it's becoming an amazing place where many teachers go. And so, and she talks about, she's not with the FPMT, which is our organization anymore, but Lama Zopa talks about her with just great high regard. But the Buddha said that, you know, without Sangha, the teachings will fade. And Buddhism has come to the West, and she has dedicated all of her energy to helping make sure that the Dharma can take root and flourish in the West. So, and I had a couple of quotes by her, but I think I've lost them. So she's... where did I put the... So she's with us. And she's taught here. She's taught here a couple of times. And one of the great stories about her that I really... She talks about Buddhism being about the mind, very much about working on your mind, radically working on your mind. And Rabina Korten talks about that. They say, are you still radical? She said, even more radical than I ever was before. I'm working on my mind. But when I remember her sitting here, and she's tiny. She's kind of a giant, but she's tiny. And she was sitting here, and you know, she's very quiet, very soft-spoken. Her maiden name was Cherry Green, or not maiden name. Oh, see? How Catholic am I? It's still there. So her maiden name was Cherry Green. Grew up a good Jewish girl, married to a lawyer, left all that, become a nun. Family pretty much disowned her for 25 years. But her father visited the abbey last year for the first time. And one of the stories she heard from him when he went back home, and she says, oh, I am so proud of my daughter. She's the CEO of an abbey. But she sat here very quietly, and she's to introduction to our talk, and she said, these tankas are beautiful. These statues are beautiful. You know, and when we meet Buddhism, we want our mala, and, you know, and we want our bell, and we want our statue, and we have our water bowls for our altar. And she said, very quietly, that's all wonderful, and it's all bling. Buddhism is about our minds. And if those things help our minds, it's wonderful. But finally, it's about working on our minds. And then she began teaching. And I've always remembered that because I can have a great attachment to the stuff of Buddhism. This is Geshe Wangmo. She came here to teach. She's the first female Geshe. She tells the story of she became a nun when she was 19, 20 years old. Started to kind of go on a trip before she went to university. She's German. And went home and talked to her parents and said, I want to become a nun. And they said, are you sure, dear? And she said yes. So back to India she went. Studied at the Dialectical Institute for 17 years. So one of the things that she did was she could go to the classes, but part of becoming a Geshe is being good at debate. And at that time, they would not allow any women on the debate court. Her teacher encouraged her. And all the people on the debate court then just came to her room and debated with her. So she finished her studies. Women kind of, it's a question, are women going to be Geshes or not? Well, she said it didn't matter. I was going to continue to teach. So a knock and a letter comes on her door. And in 2011, she was awarded the Geshe degree and continues to teach. And more of the monasteries and the nunneries in India, the Dalai Lama has asked the Geshes to go and teach, and there are rigorous courses of study, and there are women in their third year of exams for their Geshe degree. But the Dharma was the most important thing to her, and she did it, and it was wonderful. And Amy Miller, fundraising executive in Washington, D.C., then served the Dharma for many years in California, and then became a nun and an amazing teacher. She's also been with us here. And all of these people, I'm saying this, and maybe this is just a talk for myself, is all of the things that people that have practiced the Dharma, whether it's lay people or nuns, that have been willing to do in order to work on their minds, just amazes me. Or as Lama Zopa Rinpoche would say, wow, 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 wow. And this is not a nun who has taught here, but she is, if anyone knows her, many of us have begun with reading Pema Chodron, When Things Fall Apart. She's 79 years old, still practicing, still teaching. Also established a monastery that's in Nova Scotia for all Sangha, but, you know, attracts Westerners. I think I'll just, you know, ultimately there is light and love and intelligence in this universe, and we are it. We carry that within us. It is not just something out there, it is within us, and this is what we are trying to reconnect with. We have to cultivate contentment with what we have. We really don't need much. When you know this, the mind settles down. Cultivate generosity, delight in giving, learn to live lightly. We can begin to transform what is negative into what is positive. This is how we start to grow up. So that's it. So I think that, you know, the big thing for me is the willingness to, no matter what the obstacles are, kind of keep on trudging and trekking. But also the gift of service. You know, the monks, you know, and I say the gift of service. There are many people here at the center, not Sangha, that serve in huge, huge, huge ways, and it is part of their practice. So thank you for letting me babble on, and I guess we have a few more minutes, and if anyone would like to share or comment about what this meant or how this might have been, you know, not even helpful or not helpful, could have been discouraging, who knows. I always learn something when people share, so. Barry, would you use the mic? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you were quoted, I think it was the first nun, and you had said, life is a journey, and I forgot what was, it really resonated with me after you, and she had said, life is a journey, and then, but I can't remember if you could repeat that. If you could repeat that.
It's not what you gain, but what you lose.
Thank you. That's what, that resonates with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. What?
Quiet group.
Yeah, great. So,
go ahead. Yeah, Vance.
Yes. Thank you.
Just kind of piggybacking off the quote that he was talking about. You know, it's not what you gain; it's what you lose. For me, really, what that said was that. And just losing the things that you think you need in life, you really begin to get equipped with the things that, you know, you actually need, which is, it's nothing really materialistic, and it's the things that you actually can't lose. So that's really what it said to me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. There's a joke. Well, it's kind of a joke. It's in a cartoon, but this person goes all the way to the top of the mountain to see the Buddha. And says, what did you get out of all this meditation? And the Buddha says, nothing. But what I lost is anger, resentment, greed, jealousy, discontent. So, okay.
Hi.
Oh, please, Amanda.
You know, also talking about what you lose, you know, is what you gain. I was just thinking about how a lot of times when I'm in a lot of pain, emotional pain, you know, I that's when I'm really willing to listen and to look at lessons and teachers. And that was something else I was thinking of, is like not just physical teachers, but the teachers of life, and the things that I've learned through my experiences through emotional pain.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. If you can turn to page, I think it's 246 in the prayer book, we will say Messi Shanta Davis dedication. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness by virtue, joy, by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind day down by depression. And the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find hungry, hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drink. May the poor find wealth. Those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. If you can turn back to page 244. Yeah. These are long life prayers. For His Holiness the Dalai Lama, in the land encircled by the snow mountain, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara's end. For Gumed Ken Rinpoche Jetson Lapsang Delek, the one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara's end. for Lama Zopa Rinpoche. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples. Please, please live long. For Geshe Gelug's long...